CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast.
Now here's your host, Brad Pepping.
Good evening and thanks for joining us tonight. It had a rocky start as official zombies greeted its arrival in Victoria. It paraded through Canadian cities and met hostility, jubilation, and mass apathy. Now it has passed by our station and is moments away from ushering in the 21st Winter Olympic Games here in Vancouver, British Columbia. And there could be no other way to commence the next 2 weeks of Olympic-themed broadcast, brought to you by the news team at CITR 101.9 FM, than by examining the torch relay in the lead-up to the opening ceremonies in a few minutes. Today on the program, we're excited to bring you live coverage of the first protest to occur during the Games, and certainly not the last, marching from the Vancouver Art Gallery to Victoria Square. We'll also hear from Hassan Junaid, media coordinator of the Legal Observer program, about the latest in civil liberties during the Games. Later, we'll bring you coverage of the Olympic torch's progress down Commercial Drive this morning, as well as highlights from the arrival of the flame on campus last night. We hope you'll stay with us as we examine the beginning of what is sure to be an exciting 2 weeks of Olympics here in Vancouver. First up on the line, I have Hassan Junaid, media coordinator of the BCCLA Legal Observer program. The program was initiated back in September in order to train eyes to be observers during the Olympics and be able to report about what's happening. They have a team of about 50 lawyers who are ready to help out any protesters who are jailed or just be able to comment on what's happening with freedom of expression and that type of thing. Hassan Junaid, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Hi, nice to be here.
I was hoping you could just give us a rundown of what's been happening so far in the lead up to the Games.
Well, just today, we've had events all day, and we've had our legal observers following it. And where the torch went today, protesters followed. So in the morning, there was Victory Square, as you mentioned, Commercial Drive, and right now, the protest is headed, about to reach BC Place, or may have already reached it as we are talking right now. So we've been there throughout the entire day, monitoring the situation.
And what's the impression? How has it been going so far?
The crowd turnout has been amazing, but of course, there's a large police presence as well. We don't have fully substantiated stories in yet. Things are coming in very fast, so we're going to have to sit down at the end and then kind of assess what kind of information we got.
And so, can you tell us what you're hoping these legal observers will be observing? What do you expect them to be reporting about?
We are here to see the security apparatus allows the freedom of speech and expression and civil liberties to still be exercised while these games are being brought on.
And so can you tell us about just kind of what legal observers are expecting to see and what type of support, I guess, what protesters can receive from the BCCLA?
Well, protesters can receive an unbiased and neutral account of what happened, of the security forces' treatment of their rights. We are not focusing on the protesters because the police are focusing on the protesters. So what we're watching is the people who are watching the protesters, the security forces, the private security, all the extra people that are brought in for security for the games. So what they're getting is somebody who's going to have a neutral and balanced account of what happened on tape.
Right. And so I was wondering if you could maybe just tell us a little bit about your presence in the W2. And I believe that Mayor Robertson was within the vicinity of the Legal Observer headquarters the other day, but did he stop in and talk to you guys?
Mayor Robertson, he did come to W2, but I believe I was not actually in the office at the time, but I believe he did not stop in to the Legal Observer office. He came by W2's the social media center. We're unrelated to the social media center. We share a building with them. However, we're proud to share a building with them, but we are unrelated to the actual W2 community.
And as a spokesperson of the Legal Observer program, as part of the BCCLA, could you run us through what the BCCLA has been experiencing in terms of the treatment by VanOck and by Vancouver?
The treatment of the Legal Observer Program or the treatment of civil liberties?
Just both in general.
Well, the treatment of civil liberties, we've seen it's been a fight with them since the beginning. They have conceded certain points, but since the beginning, the proposed bylaws that came out that we fought tooth and nail against, which they did resile from some of the more extreme aspects of. We saw with the LRAD, the long-range acoustical device, the hidden nature with which certain security procedures were being brought in. We saw that it's been a battle with them since the beginning. They want to go as far as possible, and then we've had to try to bring them back from that extreme point. In terms of the actual Legal Observer Program, we have been working very transparently. We've gone through our lesson plan with members of the security forces. We've laid it all out. They know what we look like. They know what our shirts are. They know where we're going to be. So that's been pretty good so far.
And lastly, I was hoping that you could just fill us in if you have any last comments or if you have any advice for people who might be considering protesting in the next 2 weeks.
Well, we're going to see. Today is really going to set the tone in terms of what the city of Vancouver feels that, how the city of Vancouver views a full airing of expressions, of different viewpoints, of people's right to show their disapproval or approval of the game. So today's really kind of a tester in that regard. And as we are going to be talking over the next couple of weeks with different members of our Legal Observer Program, I believe, every Monday and Friday, they'll be able to kind of give you more of an account of how things are going. We're just at the start right now, and we'll just have to see.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with us today. We really do appreciate it, and best of luck in the next 2 weeks.
Thank you so much. You too.
Cheers. That was Hassan Junaid, media coordinator of the Legal Observer Program, speaking about the Olympics to date. We're going to hear now from from reporter Andrew Longhurst, co-director of News 101 here at CITR, who's currently at the protest, is currently marching, I guess, towards, or they've already reached, as Hassan said, BC Place. Earlier today, he spoke with reporter Megan Turcato about the atmosphere of the start of the protest or of the demonstration or of the march. Here are his thoughts about security and whether about not getting permit for this protest.
So yeah, I'm at the north side of the Vancouver Art Gallery right now. People are still gathering. There's quite a bit of activity, lots of signs. They've had speakers, they've had chants, they've had different performance groups that have been doing some satire, some street theater, and quite interesting, quite entertaining. There's a number of different bands playing. And David Eby has spoken already. He's spoken about why it's important, and he's told people that he's so glad that people have come out here despite the fact that there's been a lot of pressure on them not to come out here. And so generally, people are still rallying here at the gallery, and we're still, we haven't left here on the march yet. So at that point, then we can, I'll give you another update.
And what kind of a crowd are you seeing there? Is it a mix of, like, old people and young people, or what's the demographic?
It's a real mix. It looks like a lot of older activists here. We've got lots of cyclists here, lots of people that have come by bike, lots of young people, too, lots of younger activists. It's a really wide variety. A lot of, yeah, it's hard to say that this crowd is one, you know, it's such a mix that I can't say it's one. There's one overwhelmingly, significant group of people that, you know, demographic here. So it's quite interesting in that regard. It's also interesting to see that there are some people here that are here for probably the opening ceremonies that are coming here to take photos at the Olympic clock and other things, and not come here and are not quite sure what's going on, but then soon realize that there is a protest going on. So it's quite interesting right now.
And so there was concern about police presence, obviously, during the games. What is it like at the protest?
Right now, there's limited police presence. There are a number of police on bikes, but I'm not right now. There's not a large presence. and I haven't done a whole perimeter. I haven't walked the perimeter of the gallery space yet, of the courtyard. But I don't see very many police at this point. I think they're probably realizing that that may only escalate the situation.
Mm-hmm. And so there was some concern about this protest and whether or not it would receive a permit. Can you fill us in on that?
Yeah, so the 2010 Welcoming Committee, which is a group that made up of a number of different activist groups that worked to put this together and organize this, applied for a permit from the city. And I spoke briefly with the Assistant Director of Communications at the City Clerk's Office at the City of Vancouver. And apparently for this space, they've suspended the permit process because they feel that having the exhibition here on this courtyard makes it really not a good place for groups to organize, and therefore they felt like it wasn't appropriate to be granting permits at this time. That said, the 2010 Welcoming Committee did say that previously that they would be out here regardless whether they got a permit or not, and clearly that's evident right now.
That was reporter and co-director of news at CITR, Andrew Longhurst, speaking with Megan Turcato earlier this afternoon about the start of the protest earlier today. On the line, I currently have Andrew. And Andrew, I was hoping you could fill us in. How's the protest gone so far? And have things kind of changed since we last talked to you?
Yeah, so the route that the march took is it left the north side of the Vancouver Art Gallery, and it continued heading east on Georgia. Then it took a turn down Hamilton to head south, and then from there it then took a turn on Robson, then heading east towards BC Place. So right now I'm actually at the corner of Beattie and Robson. There are two rows of metal barricades set up. It's basically right now a standstill between protesters and police. From what I've seen, there are two rows of police on foot, and then there's also mounted police as well. So right now it's been completely nonviolent. I haven't witnessed any confrontations between police and protesters. So in that sense, it's been quite quite nonviolent and gone pretty well. So that's where it's at this point.
Can you describe the atmosphere of those protesters who are at a standstill? Are they quite upset?
Yeah, I was up in the front, and activists actually had asked over their bullhorn, over their loudspeaker, for all journalists to get out of the way. They said, "We appreciate your interest, but we really need you to move out of the way," because the journalists were between the barricades and the protesters. And so I got out of the way partly because I needed to talk to you in a quieter area. I'm just in a cafe at the corner, but I can see what's going on. And right now, we can also see a number of the buses coming by, and it also looks like for organizers and VANOC, it's become a bit trickier for them to get to BC Place as well. So right now, the protesters seem like they're holding their ground.
And can you tell us, do you happen to know where the torch is at the moment? Is the torch already out?
I don't know at this point. I can see the poverty torch right out the window right now, but I don't know where the official torch is at this point.
You had mentioned that there were some police officers on foot. Can you describe, standing by in two rows? Can you describe? Are they actively kind of engaged? Are they ready to receive any type of...
The police on feet, on foot rather, are not in riot gear. The mounted police though are. They have helmets on with shields over their faces. So they didn't obviously want to make it look, I would guess, like they were wanting to escalate the situation. So at this point, but as I'm looking out the window, we've got, it looks like at least another 20 police on foot that are making their way towards the intersection of Robson and Beattie. So I don't know if they're just beefing up the number of police between protesters and the metal barricades or what's going on. But there are also quite a few legal observers around in the orange shirts that say that they are legal observers. And so that's also good to see as well.
And can you give us your opinion about just the general atmosphere of the protesters and these activists? Do you think that things could escalate in the coming moments, or are people just happy to...
It's hard to say after I talk with you. I'm going to go out there and try to get a sense of the atmosphere. Okay. But right now, I don't see anything at this point. If it continues like it is now, I don't know if it will escalate. I really doubt it. I think most protesters and activists really have no interest in it being like this, or it escalating for that matter. So I think people were in a pretty cheery mood, especially when we left the art gallery. Lots of music, lots of chants. Food Not Bombs was there. They're going to be handing out food to protesters. It will be interesting to wait and see, but at this point, it seems fairly calm for a protest of this scale. And I did want to note also that I stood at one point and observed the protest going by, and it took about 15 to 18 minutes for the whole protest to filter down the street. And this was essentially body-to-body protesters. So considerably good sized. I don't know approximately what the number would be, but I would guess upwards of at least 5,000.
Well, thank you so much for that. Those updates. We'll catch you in a few minutes to see how things have transpired in the coming moments. But thank you very much for this stuff.
Great. Thanks, Brad.
We're going to go now to a report that Andrew has produced for us. He has been following a story that's been developing about the arrival of independent media and activists in Vancouver. He spoke with a member of the Anti-Poverty Committee about about a journalist who was detained at the Vancouver airport and was later refused entry to Canada. For that report, we turn to Andrew Longhurst.
What's your affiliation again with the Olympic Resistance Network?
I'm with their legal team.
Okay. And you're based out of Toronto?
I'm based out of Toronto. I'm with the Movement Defense Committee of the Law Union of Ontario.
Okay.
And three of us came in from the Movement Defense Committee to assist with legal during the demonstration.
Okay. And so you're now here in Vancouver?
I sure am.
Okay. And can you give us an idea of what happened on Tuesday with the independent journalist who was denied entry into the country?
Basically, what happened was he was questioned about what he was going to be doing in Canada, in Canada. They asked him questions about his politics. We also had another journalist, by the way, who was questioned like this. And they told him he could either leave or be arrested, and he went back. We had another journalist who was questioned yesterday. She just called us today. And they asked her a bunch of questions about her politics. They told her that she wasn't allowed to do journalism in Canada, that was considered working without a work permit, which is actually not true under the Immigration Refugee Protection Regulations.
So Canada Border Services said you can't be a journalist in Canada, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And they Googled her. When they Googled her, they found a picture of her being pepper sprayed and said, oh, so you're like a protester. And she said, no, I'm an independent journalist. And they hassled her for about an hour and a half. They went through, this is a common theme, which they did with her, is they went through her computer and her datebook and her cell phone. And then they let her in, but they let her in with one of these pink sheets that they're doing that basically spells out a series of restrictions on the person when they enter the country. We also had a phone call about a group of Americans who were held for 12 hours yesterday and questioned, and then sent back to the United States, a carload from Oregon.
Okay. And the journalist on Tuesday, Mr. Osborne,
yep.
Which he was from Salt Lake City, is that correct?
That's correct.
And was he with an independent radio station, or what type of media was he?
I think he was with an independent radio station. I think he does all his own independent work as well.
And last week, another independent journalist from a community station in Chicago,
yep.
Was also detained for 8 hours?
Yeah, and questioned as well.
And that was at the Vancouver International Airport, and then subsequently put on a plane back to Seattle.
Yep. They've been doing it at the train station. They've been doing it at the airport. They've been doing it at the border entry points south of Vancouver. The common theme is that they ask people a lot of political questions, that they are clearly gathering intelligence because they go through people's paperwork and computers and cell phones. And I think they're also trying to send a chill across people about protesting the Olympics.
Today, or actually, sorry, yesterday on Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman reported on this story, her second report on independent journalists being denied entry into the country because she, as well, had a significant amount of trouble actually coming to Vancouver for an event that CITR, among two other stations, was hosting her. And so she commented on that, and it looks like it's now becoming a regular pattern, especially for the games.
The exclusion of journalists, I mean, that's one thing I'd say, is that the questioning is across the board, but the exclusion seemed to be on journalists. They seem to be really trying to keep journalists out of the country.
And at this point, are there any legal remedies for this?
Well, the beauty is that they've been convincing people to leave voluntarily. When you convince someone to leave voluntarily, or you do a turn back at the border, there's no official decision by the Canada Border Services Agent, so there's nothing to review. Now, if they wanted to deport people, they would have to detain them, they would have to issue a report, they'd have to bring them in front of the tribunal, the Immigration Refugee Board. We would have a chance to legally fight it. When they do the turn backs and the voluntary departures, there's no opportunity to fight it. People could pursue civil remedies. They could sue the Canada Border Services Agency in the BC court, but that's going to happen over time. I think the best remedy, though, I have to say, is that people get out on the streets tomorrow and on Saturday and explain clearly and strongly why people are upset about the Olympics coming here, why they're upset about the Olympics being on stolen native territory, and why they're upset about the street sweeping of the streets of homeless and sex workers. And let the Canadian government know that they can't use fear and intimidation tactics to shut the movement down.
Have you contacted Canada Border Services regarding this issue?
We've been doing some back and forth, but to be honest, because there's no official officer decision, there's not really anything, at least, except in the long term, in terms of a civil suit, there's not really anything legally that can be done. The immigration system in Canada is such that these officers operate basically with impunity. I mean, every day, you know, this is big news, but every day, and I see this in my trade, they turn back poor people of color from South countries, and they do send people back to oppression and poverty, often, if not breaking the law, at least skirting it. And because the system's set up this way, there's no way to hold them accountable.
Has the Olympic Resistance Network contacted any members of Parliament regarding this?
I think we're more focused on defending the people who get over here and on, supporting people as they come across the border where we can. We've been sending clear messages out to people in the United States about what may happen at the border and how to deal with it. I don't think it's within our tactics or our usual work to contact members of Parliament. And I think there's such a hype about the Olympics, I'm not sure how well that would work. Mm-hmm. I think in the aftermath, we need to look at, tactics like letting the government know that this isn't acceptable, that skirting the law on immigration on immigration enforcement is not acceptable. But it's such a quick term that I don't know if anything could be done by even contacting members of Parliament.
So do you have numbers at this point about how many independent journalists or activists have been denied entry into the country?
I don't have official numbers. I can tell you how many contacts we have. We've had probably 24 people not call us, but like in groups that we've heard of who have been turned back.
Okay.
And I would say at least 6 or 7 of those maybe were independent journalists.
Okay.
There's clearly a trend.
And last week, the independent journalist from Chicago was held for 8 hours at the airport. Are you getting reports that other activists and other members of the independent press are being held for similar amounts of time, or are these exceptions?
We had a carload held for 12 hours yesterday.
12 hours, okay.
Now, I mean, the other thing I'd say there, again, and it's indicative of how they skirt the law. They say when you're at the border, you're being examined, so therefore you don't have the right to counsel. But, I mean, being in a space, a small space for 12 hours where you can't leave, sure as hell sounds like detention to me. And these people should have right to counsel under our Charter of Rights and Freedom, and they're denying that.
Have you been contacted by members of the more mainstream media about this issue?
I've been talking with Globe and Mail and some others, yeah.
Okay, so there is interest in this story, not only from the independent press, but the larger mainstream press.
Yep.
Okay, and so this looks like it. There's really nothing that you can do legally to prevent this from happening, at least at this
point
in time.
I mean, immigration law is not like criminal law, where there's procedural fairness and certain safeguards, though certainly there's huge problems around racism and classism with criminal law. But that said, I mean, we're going to continue to stand by people, give advice. If people are detained, we will be defending them on a pro bono basis. And, you know, in the long run, we will assist people in seeking remedy in the civil courts. But yeah, the short answer would be there's not much we can do at this point.
I've put in interview requests for a member of parliament from Vancouver, from the official opposition, and from interview request with the Minister of Public Safety. If I'm to speak with them, what questions would you like to hear me ask them?
I'd like to know why Van Loan, which is the Minister of Emergency Preparedness and Public Safety, I'd like to know why he feels that immigration officers shouldn't be held to the rule of law. I'd like to know why he feels that immigration law should be used as a tool to break people's rights under Section 2 of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, to freedom of assembly and freedom of expression.
Okay.
I'd also like to know, in the larger scale, why they run such a racist immigration system, but I guess that's another day's question.
Yeah. So, and now, can you briefly summarize how people can get in touch with you if they are having trouble getting across the border or are being detained?
Yeah. If they're having problems at the border, they should call 1-877-823-2010. If they have problems, like they are having problems with police or are arrested while they're at the demonstration, they should call 604-689-9540.
And what role is U.S. Border Services and Homeland Security having in this? Are they playing a role in this as well?
Yes. What's also been happening is people are getting double questioned on their way back through into the United States by the Department of Homeland Security. We've heard a number of reports of that.
So, and obviously there's information sharing going on between the two agencies?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thanks so much for speaking to CITR.
Thanks to Andrew for that report. It's a story we'll be sure to follow and keep you updated on in the next few weeks. We're going to take a quick break now, but stay tuned. When we come back, we'll be hearing again from Andrew about about any updates about the protest. We'll also be hearing about how the torch fared as it passed by Commercial Drive and how it fared last night here at UBC. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Tuesday, February 23rd, beginning at sunset in Montreal, broadcasting live on your local campus and community radio station.
Sometimes we get that instant homelessness. We didn't expect to be homeless, and we find ourselves on the street because of an eviction or a notice.
Canada's largest talk show on poverty and homelessness.
We have a mayor who compared poor people to pigeons publicly and said that if you stop feeding them, they'll go away.
The 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, broadcasting February 23rd to 24th. A 14-hour live radio show from frozen street corners across Canada. Call in live, join the discussion.
Our demand from the federal government is $2 billion a year for social housing units across Canada. That'll just help us to start catching up to the 15 years that we've lost in building social housing in this country. It's really a glaring example of the negligence of the government.
Visit www.ckut.ca for more info.
The Homelessness Marathon will be broadcasting live from Vancouver on Tuesday, February 23rd at 8 p.m. As CITR 101.9 FM partners with CJSF 90.1 FM and Co-op 102.7 FM to bring you an hour of interviews and stories of how the 2010 Olympics are affecting homelessness in Vancouver. Visit CITR.ca for more information.
LiveVan.com is Vancouver's most reputable community-driven concert calendar. New shows are listed daily by the city's most prominent promoters, but also by you. the musicians and fans were the driving force of our local music scene. LiveBand.com's listings are different because they're personalized. They're integrated with local music directories that are constantly updated by the bands, musicians, and businesses who refer to them as they pick locations and lineups for their newest upcoming shows. And no one's barred from contributing, since we all know fans know more about the players than anyone. So visit livemusicvancouver.com for the latest major and independent event listings. And while you're at it, check out our archives and discover how closely we all work together in this community, putting on the shows you love.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
Thanks for coming back. This is Brad Pepink live in studio at CITR 101.9 FM in the Student Union Building in Vancouver, British Columbia. We are this is the first broadcast of our official Olympic coverage occurring during the Olympic Games. And up now we have some clips that reporter Andrew Longhurst prepared. He was down on the ground today on Commercial Drive as the Olympic torch relay attempted to, spread around their cheer in that neighborhood. Here's some clips of people he spoke with.
And what's your name?
Lena.
And we're at the intersection of Venables and Commercial Drive, and blocked the intersection. What do you think about it?
I think it's great. Just this morning's news tells about all the cuts the provincial government is making to essential services to children, for poor people, health, education, and they're spending billions on the Olympics that will get us nothing. I think we have to show our protest.
And there's rope and barbed wire being strung across the north side of the street here on Venables and Commercial. Do you think this is a good tactic?
I don't have an opinion either way. Okay. I think the important thing is people, hundreds of people are here showing their opposition to the Olympics and to all that has come to mean.
And how do you feel about the police response, or maybe the lack of police response?
Well, so far the police, as far as I can see, have behaved, at least here, in a very civilized manner. Right now I'm looking at five or six police officers, and they're just watching the crowd. That's okay. I have no objections to that. I want to see what they do when we actually stop the torch from coming up here.
Have you heard anything about the torch being rerouted?
No, I haven't. But I understand that a bunch of brave people stopped it at Victory Square, and I think that's wonderful.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
What's your name?
My name is Nick Heichel.
And you're standing in the middle of the intersection of First and Commercial Drive. What's going on here?
There's some unhappy people, for sure. I don't know. The Olympic torch just went down that way. We saw it light up. And then saw a bunch of police officers, and now they had to reroute the torch there. And I'm just kind of reading the signs. I don't have a very strong opinion on anything either way. There's a sign right there. It says, "People before profit." I tend to agree with that. I'm not against the Olympics, but if they're going to spend all that money and not try and provide housing, healthcare, education, and stuff like that, it is a bit frustrating.
Yeah. And have you taken part in any other previous protests, or is this, you just came upon this because of the torch relay and you were right next to it?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm taking part.
Well, or being in the same space.
Yeah, no, I've never been to any protests before. This is a totally new thing to me, so.
Great, thank you.
Police car just was ferrying a torch bearer by very quickly. So that's how the torch passes through each van, very quickly in a police car. But can't stop the People's Republic from partying, so we're going to keep on going.
And are you, I see you've got a Better Transit, Not Freeway sign, are you part of Gateway Sucks or affiliated with it?
Yes, I am. I'm part of Gateway Sox, and our point in being here is that the major sponsors of the Olympics are also the major investors in the Alberta tar sands. So basically, what we're looking at here downtown is a lot of dirty oil money pouring over our region, and that is not necessary, and we're hoping to bring down Gateway soon.
And how do you feel about the protest today that happened and about how the police responded? Do you believe they responded in a good manner?
As far as I know, yeah. I actually think that the city is doing its best to sort of allow dissent to happen, and dissent will happen. Luckily, we live in a democracy, and that's why we have a chance to actually have a say in what happens on our planet here.
And will you be attending the 3 p.m. Rally and then march today?
Oh, absolutely. I know there's going to be choirs, there's going to be dancers, there's going to be a lot of alternative celebration that it's going to cost us in the tens of dollars.
And that was Andrew Longhurst down on Commercial Drive this morning as the Olympic torch passed by that neighborhood. On the line, we have Andrew back again. And Andrew, I was hoping that you could tell us, what was the atmosphere of being down with the torch, and how did people feel about it being around Commercial Drive?
Yeah, so I got there around 9 o'clock, and that was the time that organizers had encouraged people to gather at Grandview Park at Commercial Drive, just at Charles Street. And so we got there, gathered for about half an hour or so, and then started at that point marching north on Commercial, and had gotten word that from organizers that the Olympic torch had been rerouted coming through the downtown east side at Victory Square Park. And so that gave a lot of activists and protesters something to encourage them even more to get out into the street. So walking north on Commercial, everyone then stopped at Venables and the intersection of Venables and Commercial, and at that point basically blocked that intersection. Then organizers went on to tie rope, and then later some barbed wire along on the north side of Venables at that intersection. So that was obviously because the torch was they were going to run it. The torch was going to come down Hastings, heading east on Hastings, then heading south on Commercial Drive. So and that was an attempt to completely reroute that and force the torch to reroute. So at that point, Olympic torch vehicles showed up, like the Coca-Cola vehicle, part of the torch relay caravan showed up, and essentially they were forced to turn around. The other interesting thing is also around the time when that intersection was being occupied, a police van came up, pulled up. Obviously, you know, maybe there was some intention to start arresting protesters. I don't know. I don't know if I would want to speculate, but I thought that was interesting. And then about 15 minutes after it showed up, it backed out and left the scene completely. So, and there were police scattered throughout the protest, mainly police on bikes, though. So really, they didn't want anything to escalate, and they didn't want to give protesters reasons to escalate the situation or, you know, create any confrontations. So, and then at that point, the torch was rerouted. Organizers announced that it had been rerouted down Clark. So at that point, protesters headed south on Commercial Drive, so going back in the direction that we had initially come in originally, and then occupying the intersection of Charles and Commercial. And at that intersection, mounted police, did show up and created a police line on the south side of that intersection. And I think that act did escalate things a bit. There were some clearly very angry about that. And so I don't know if, you know, really what the purpose was for that. But they just, overhearing police, they said, you know, this is closed, right? And then that gave protesters the reason to question, but this is, you know, this is our road, this is our street, how can you close this? So at that point, then it was interesting, about 5 minutes after that, then the mounted police left, and there's also a police line with police on bicycles, and they also left the scene as well. And then at that point, the protest was about to go down an alleyway to get to continue heading south, but then the protest connected up again and continued heading south on Commercial, and then occupied the intersection of First and Commercial. And as you are aware, that's a fairly busy intersection there with First, because First is a major route heading to downtown. So, but it was interesting. Police made really no attempt to prevent people from taking that intersection. So, and at that point, people, you know, it became sort of a street festival. It was pretty, the atmosphere was light, it was fun, there was music, there was dancing. And then at that point, it sort of just trickled off. And at that point, police really didn't do much at that point. So that was interesting that they took a much more limited role in that, realizing that the situation, you know, bringing in mounted police was probably not the best solution to the situation.
So you had mentioned just how prepared Vanock seemed to be in preparing for the torch relay, but it sounds like the protesters were also quite organized and that they're communicating quite well with each other, redirecting themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been a really big attempt among Olympic Resistance Network organizers and other groups to really coordinate their actions. And I saw that today as well at the protest here, that I did see organizers communicating via, via walkie-talkies and such, and so that was interesting as well. So I think in many ways there is, and it's hard, right, organizing a number of different groups, right? So you need to really have sort of an idea of where the direction of the group is going to go.
So you've mentioned this, but I was hoping that you could touch on it a bit more. You said, you know, the Coca-Cola caravan was there and the Vancouver police were there. So there's elements of corporatism and security and those types of issues. And as you've made mention, there's been quite a coalition, a bunch of groups who are uniting as Olympic resistors. Can you tell us about some of the reasons that people were protesting even today at the protest and some of the different groups that you've seen?
Yeah, I would say the main themes were around housing. You know, housing, not games, that's the main rallying point. And also no games on stolen native ground, native land. That's also a major rallying point as well. So I think those are, I think, the loudest messages, but then also, you know, at today's protest, and then, both protests today, the Commercial Drive torch relay protest and the protest here, Take Back Our City protest. Also, the tar sands has been brought into the issue as well. So there's been lots of chanting as well about Alberta needing to shut down the tar sands and the fact that RBC is largely one of the main financiers of the tar sands development. So that's also been something that a lot of people are very concerned about and frustrated with. And also the fact that Coca-Cola is a sponsor and that a number of labor unionists in Colombia and other Latin American countries have disappeared. And, largely many do believe because of Coca-Cola's involvement in that.
So you had mentioned that when the protest trying to stop the flame had taken over that intersection, it had evolved into a street festival of sorts where there was kind of a very jovial atmosphere and people were playing music, that type of thing. That brings us to what's happening right now. Can you tell us about the atmosphere downtown?
Yeah, right now I took a peek and I stood on a barricade just to get a view of the entire protest. And right now it's about half a block in size, pretty much body to body. They're right up against the barricades. There are an incredible number of police behind the barricades. And I think right now, actually, I've heard that the reason many are staying is for the torch itself to come by. And so a lot of a lot of people want to be there. And I don't know at this point if there's, you know, if protesters will respond to the torch coming by in any way, in a different way. But at this point in time, it's been completely peaceful, nonviolent. And I've seen very, I haven't seen actually any confrontations. The only verbal confrontations I've seen is between Olympic supporters who are, you know, can't believe why people would be out here on the street, and then those who are part of the protest. So, and I think in a large number are just sort of shocked that actually this many people oppose the Olympics. So I think for many it's an eye-opener.
And maybe you could tell us a little bit about the different coverage between the torch relay and the poverty torch relay. Do you think that the protesters kind of carrying the poverty torch are hoping that the corporate sponsors of corporate media sponsors of the Olympics will be able to kind of hear their message when it crosses? Is that why they're staying?
Yeah, I mean, I think just incredible, a very dramatic difference between the poverty torch relay and the official Olympic torch relay. And there's been, yeah, obviously, you know, the official Olympic torch relay has corporate sponsors everywhere on every vehicle. Sometimes it's hard to find the actual Vancouver 2010 logo for the actual game. So, yeah, and I think by having, you know, Coca-Cola trucks and these as part of the caravan, it really it does sort of look more like you're trying to feature the sponsors than you are the athletes or the actual games I would say to that extent, yeah, poverty torch relay, very different. Lots, you know, and also with the poverty torch relay that I covered on Sunday, lots of street dancing, lots of music, impromptu singing, just a very festive spirit. And the thing with the official torch relay, it's very sanitized. Lots of police on the street, lots of, you know, even at 9 o'clock when we showed up and people started gathering at Grandview Park for the protest of the Olympic torch down Commercial Drive, there were already police showing up well before anything was getting going. So it is interesting just the security presence around these things. And the other thing I did want to mention that was interesting that I did observe was actually one of the torchbearers from the official Olympic torch relay was coming off of Commercial Drive through the neighborhood. She must have completed her leg of the torch relay, and then the protest was sort of the protest was breaking up, and then they spotted her and then started following her. And at that point, a number of officers started escorting her down a neighborhood street just off Commercial Drive, while protesters came along chanting and essentially, you know, shouting shame, shame, shame. And at that point, they basically, a police car showed up very quickly. They put her in the cop car, and at that point, they drove off very quickly. So that was quite an interesting incident. And, you know, she had the torch in her hands. It was out, obviously, but that was also an interesting, just something that I came across, which was quite interesting to see firsthand.
So, Andrew, I was hoping maybe you could give us your opinion. These events that you've described, the over-sanitation of the official torch relay and the jovial spirit of the poverty torch relay, as well as this incident where the police were able to intervene before anything happened, before any type of altercation was to transpire. Is this something that we can expect for the next 2 weeks? Do you anticipate
if anything, if any of this says anything, and I think there's a lot to be, you know, that comes out of what we've seen so far, and we aren't even into the first official day of the games, is that there is an incredible security presence everywhere in the city. And I think you see it especially in certain neighborhoods like the downtown east side. I've spoken to a number of people living in the downtown east side, and, you know, police are in alleys, police are on the street. It has a very militarized feel. And you know, to that extent, also police coming from different areas. And I think that was also one concern of some, you know, some commentators was, well, maybe police forces from coming from other parts of the country to Vancouver for the games don't have an understanding of what Vancouver, the history of Vancouver's political activism and social activism. And so that, you know, maybe that's a problem, because with the games and with so much opposition, we really need a police force and a security force that understands that dissent is good and dissent is okay, and this is democracy and this is Canadian democracy, and Vancouver has a history of this and it's not going away. But based on the number of incidents where organizers and even friends of organizers or spouses or partners have been visited by the Vancouver Integrated Security Unit, I don't know if even the Vancouver police and the other security forces are respecting that.
Right. Well, thank you very much for those comments about the most recent events. We also have some clips that you've prepared from when the Olympic torch reached campus, UBC campus,
right,
which was last night. First up, we're going to play a clip from Gregory Williams, and he was speaking after the protest.
That's right. Actually, yeah, it was actually, I spoke to him just before the protest got the march started. This is at the point we were gathering, everyone was gathering just outside the student union building. And I spoke to him because he's one of the main organizers within the Social Justice Center, which is the larger UBC student group that was organizing the on-campus protest to the Olympic torch. So I spoke with him about why he was there and his thoughts on the torch relay, and specifically in the context of it being on the UBC campus.
And what's your name?
Gregory Williams.
And what are you doing here today?
I'm here today because I'm part of the group that is going to be protesting the torch at UBC.
And why are you here protesting? Why do you think it's important to be protesting on the UBC campus?
Because the Olympics as a whole, in coming to Vancouver, have more than doubled the homeless population in the greater Vancouver region. That's just the visible homeless population. The invisible homeless population is probably much higher. We've seen the elimination of over 850 units of low-income housing. We have seen mass corporatization of most areas of the city, including our campus. You will notice all of the people who are officials here are dressed up in Coca-Cola outfits. And that is just a wonderful company that we absolutely love because of how many trade unionists they've killed in Colombia. So there are a myriad reasons why the Olympics kind of suck.
And what group are you affiliated with, a specific group here on campus?
I'm personally affiliated with the Student Christian Movement of UBC, but there are many other groups represented here, and you can find out by talking to other people here.
Okay. And for you, is it a moral issue for you? You say you're affiliated with the Christian group on campus.
Absolutely. This is a moral and religious issue for me. As you can see, I've got my Bible here right now because this Bible is the real reason that I am protesting.
And for you, have you seen some of the immediate impacts of the Olympics in Vancouver in your own life or here on campus?
Absolutely. I volunteer with a whole bunch of organizations that deal with the homeless. I volunteer with organizations in the downtown east side. And for the very first, like, for example, I volunteered at First United Church for most of last year. Never once saw them actually run out of food until very recently, just because the number of people who are going hungry is increasing that much, to the point where our soup kitchens are running out of food because of these Olympics.
And how do you expect the security and the police to respond to the protest?
Today, I don't think it's going to be so bad because these are mostly campus cops. They're not VSU. It's the Vancouver Integrated Security Unit people that we really have to be worried about.
Are they not here on campus today?
VSU is only responsible for venues, or at least they're supposed to be.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So that was a clip from before the protest, as you said, Andrew, yesterday here at UBC. And I was just hoping that maybe you could tell us about some of the other people that you spoke with and then the atmosphere of the actual event and how it transpired.
Yeah, so I spoke with Blake Frederick, the AMS president, outgoing AMS president, and as well Tim Chu, the AMS VP external as well. And I spoke to some other people as well. I spoke to an athlete who, UBC varsity athlete who was there in support of the protest and felt that, you know, the torch relay and the games themselves really have strayed far from what the intended goal is. And that, it's really, the focus is not on sports and it's, now more on just the corporatization and just having corporate branding everywhere. And so she found that really problematic, you know, while she's an athlete and she supports athletes, and I think many protesters as well do, if not all of them, but she was very concerned about that. So, yeah, and I believe I spoke to a number of others as well just about the role and just how VanOck and the university UBC administration have been quite secretive about organizing the games and venue use and things of that nature.
Well, one thing the UBC administration and Board of Governors has circumvented or curtailed every democratically elected body on campus.
Shame!
Anti-democratic!
Shame!
UBC administration is completely anti-democratic. The Board of Governors is completely anti-democratic.
Shame!
They are a body of mostly appointed directors, basically like a corporate board of directors that uses student money for whatever they want to. It's been a struggle here on campus for everything that we want to keep alive, including the farm. Who wants to save the farm?
Yeah!
We're still working to save the farm right now. It's safe right now at the moment. Jeremy wants to say something else.
Jeremy wants to pass this off again. We got your democratically elected AMS president, Blake Frederick, with us. We have anti-democratic forces on this campus trying to make this more affordable for you, and we are all pleased to have him here. He is Blake Frederick, president of the AMS. Till tomorrow.
Hello, everybody.
And I'm here with AMS president Blake Frederick. Why are you out here today, Blake?
I'm here to support the students who are making their voice loud and clear that they do not support the Olympics on their campus.
And what can you say specifically about the university, UBC administration's relationship with VanOck?
Well, UBC has is supporting the Olympic Games in its entirety by signing on to an agreement as acting as a host venue for the Olympics. And I think what's most important to point out is that they're also signing on to all the criticisms of the games as well. And that's not something that they've acknowledged to date.
And have you felt some of the impacts of the games in your own life? Or is it more of a something that you see in other communities and other neighborhoods?
Well, certainly, I felt impacts in transit and others. But these Olympics are about the impacts of the least fortunate in our society. Most in particular, the homeless people who are sleeping on the streets every night. We should be putting money into social housing, not into staging a corporate sporting event for 2 weeks.
And what can you say about the role that you would like to see the new AMS Council play in terms of its involvement and activism?
Well, the AMS Council has never really been interested in taking a stance on anything that students actually care about. This is evidenced in the fact that last year I tried to push for tuition policy. There was no interest in that. I also tried to push for the AMS to take a stance on the Olympics. The AMS does not take a stance on the Olympics. They have decided to make no comment whatsoever. So that's particularly disappointing. I think students are realizing that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you just comment on the torch relay protest and how it turned out?
The protest and the demonstration was nonviolent and peaceful. I think we were here to prove a point that there are a whole bunch of problems with these games, whether it be civil liberties erosions, evictions because of housing, VanOck being on our campus, and I think the demonstration that was peaceful really proved that point.
Were you at all surprised from the response of police?
Again, we don't know what to expect during these games, but we remained peaceful and nonviolent.
Were you pleased with how they responded to the demonstration and protest?
Again, I could only speak as a protester, and we remained nonviolent and peaceful, and we were here to prove a point, and I felt like we did.
Great, thanks so much. What's your first name?
Jacqueline.
And why are you here today at the protest of the torch relay on the UBC campus?
I'm here to protest the torch relay simply because I think there's a lot better ways the government could be spending their money. And I think homeless people deserve shelter, they can spend money on that.
Do you have anything specifically to say about UBC's relationship with VanOck?
I don't. I'm a UVic student.
Okay. Has there been much of a response on the UVic campus to the Olympics?
There's been pretty good support. We had a rally to evict VanOck last weekend. We got a decent turnout there. I know a couple of people are coming over later in the week for different protests.
Great, thank you. What's your first name?
It's Forrest.
And why are you here today?
I'm here in support of the indigenous peoples who are, and the poor people who are taking the bat into the stick for this whole extravaganza.
And have you felt some of the impacts of the games in your own life?
Not really. I mean, I'm from California and I just got here yesterday, so.
Did you have any trouble coming across the border?
No, definitely. We were looking pretty straight.
Did they question you about why you were coming and your intent here?
Yeah, they asked us if we had any reason or anything to do with the games, and I said, no, I can't afford a ticket.
Did they ask any further questions at that point?
They asked us questions non-related to the games besides that.
And do you feel like outside of, obviously, BC, it's a very big issue. In California and in the States, do you think more and more people are realizing sometimes what the games represents and the impact on local communities and populations?
Yeah, I definitely think it's more and more. I mean, it's an ongoing struggle for our whole lives, so we'll see. I don't know.
And where are you from?
I live in San Diego, California.
Okay, well, thanks California. So much. Thank you.
Thanks.
That was Andrew Longhurst reporting last night from UBC about the torch, the Olympic torch arriving on campus. And thank you very much to Andrew Longhurst for speaking with us today multiple times. We very much appreciated that. And that's our program for Friday, February 12th, 2010. Thank you very much for listening to our first broadcast during the Olympics. We hope that you'll catch us in these coming weeks. We are, just to let you know some of the things that we will be doing, we're continuing our Eyes on the Street campaign, where we're encouraging Vancouverites and our guests to the city to actively participate in media coverage of the games. So that means that if you witness something that you think that we should be talking about on air, we encourage you to tell us what happened. That means if you, let's say, for example, see that there's all Olympic ads in the city, or if you see a protest happening, give us a call, or you can tweet us, or you can email us. You can leave us a voicemail message at 604-822-5334, or you can find us on Twitter or Facebook at CITR News, or email us at news@citr.ca. I'm Brad Pepink, and Megan Turcato produced this radio program. For the entire news team, thank you so much for listening, and have a great night.